This is John Abrams, your host and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. Now's the perfect time to go back and listen to the shows that you may have missed. There's terrific interviews with Michael Finney, Steve Trash, Steve Axtell, and so many more. Go for it. On today's show, I get to interview the smallest magician in the world. My guest has been kind enough to let me share a couple of his photos on his show notes page from his years in the biz. Just visit his episode on my website at thevarietyartist.com, and you can see him there. Very cool. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
He bills himself as the world's smallest magician. He's a member of Little People of America and has been performing magic shows professionally for over 50 years. Variety artist, I give you Erwin Royes.
Let's a bon temps roulé. Let the good times roll.
Let's do it.
Yeah, the day before Mardi Gras.
Oh, it's the day before Mardi Gras there. And you're in Louisiana or New Orleans, right?
Well, I'm like 5 minutes outside of the city, which is a big difference. I'm in a suburb. Just that 5 minutes makes a great big difference.
Do you see all the craziness where you are?
No, not really.
All right, well, let's start out with the obvious questions here. How tall are you?
I am 4'3". That was my last measurement. Probably 4'2.5" now. You know, get older, you shrink.
I was going to ask that because my dad was 5'11" when I was young, you know, when he was a young adult. And now that he's older, he's probably 5'9". Mm-hmm. So he shrunk 2 inches. Does that happen to you too?
Probably so. The only thing I've done lately was weigh myself, and that was mandatory at the doctor. Mm. I'm a little person. Well, I'd have to use the title midget. Okay, and I say that word because if you look it up in a dictionary, usually it goes to that word. I am equally proportioned, if you could figure that out in your mind. If you just shrunk your body down to 4'3", you would be equally proportioned. Your arms wouldn't be extremely long. When people think about little people, they think about people who have dwarfism, and that's where you have the larger head, larger torso, shorter arms, shorter fingers. I have very long fingers. I mean, most of my body is equally proportioned.
So do we say little people? Is that what we say?
Yeah, you could say little person. I like little person, or even if you want to say dwarfism, that's fine with me. The Little People of America, of which I'm a life member, we're trying to get that word used as a discriminatory term. If you're calling a sports car a midget sports car, a midget horse, you know, something like that. But when speaking to a human, it basically means small and insignificant. And it started from the word midge, which was a tiny little fly like a gnat.
Yeah, you don't want that. That doesn't sound right.
I don't, you know, in show business, I don't care. Call me whatever you want.
How about Erwin?
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That really sounds good.
So what is the politically correct name for a person of my stature?
I would use average.
Is that what you say?
Yeah, I say average size. Okay. Because there's no normal. People say, oh, well, John is normal size. What is normal?
Yeah, I have no idea because, you know, I could be anywhere from 5 foot, whatever, 6 to 6'9", right?
Right. What is normal? You know, I could be the normal one.
That's right.
So no one knows. I mean, but I like the word average. It doesn't really bother me what people call me. As long as they call me, get the check.
As long as they spell your name right on the check, that's it.
That is it. You know.
Now, do little people have, or even, I guess you can speak for yourself, ailments as you get older?
My little people-ness. That sounds good. Yeah. My little people-ness is from a genetic order. It's a lack of a type 1, type 2 collagen. we traced it back in my family and we couldn't find anybody. No pun intended. I guess I drew the short straw.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what that's from. Now, dwarfism, there are, I don't know how many types of dwarfism, achondroplasia, different type of dwarfisms that there are. Osteogenesis imperfecta is the medical term for it. Mm-hmm. Basically, imperfect bone. The short word for it is brittle. Mm. I was born with a broken arm, and to get the bad stuff out the way, and over my lifetime, I've had over 160 breaks.
Wow. So what happens when you get a break?
They used to set it like a normal break with a cast, but they don't do that anymore.
A cast for an arm and a leg, but what about like a rib or, you know, something that wouldn't have a cast?
Well, I've never broken a rib. It's mostly been legs and arms.
Mm.
You hit a point in life when I was like 20 years old, when I worked in the circus, there was like no breaking at all. I've had some pretty good falls. And then as you get older, the bones seem to go back on you. Like right now I'm developing scoliosis. I have a plate in one leg. Well, anyway, all of that was downtime when I was working.
Mm-hmm.
I was on my back for 7 months. It's probably the longest I've been on my back.
That would make it tough financially. I mean, I couldn't imagine being out of work for 7 months.
That was the tough part, you know, not being able to work, not being able to take any bookings when people called because of the downtime. And my lovely wife just walked in.
Hi, lovely wife.
She can't hear you.
What is her name?
Stephanie.
Oh, Steffi. Steffi. Someone mentioned Steffi in your fan questions.
Yeah, he calls you Steffi too. Actually, I was married twice.
Mm.
I was married for 17 years. Don't know what happened. We just split. The hard part, it was like 20 years before I met, or more before I met Stephanie.
Mm.
And that was the hard part because then I had to do everything by myself. I was the show, packing, unloading, all of this stuff we have to do that people don't know. Well, I mean, people come in, they see the show, and then they leave. You were in your glorious time doing the show, and after the show, it's like, okay, everybody's gone. Who's going to help load the car?
Oh, yeah, you got to put up your sound system. And
yeah, and being 4'3", it wasn't that easy, so I had to get there extra early to do these things. But Stephanie was a blessing when I met her, and I can go now to a show, and I can talk to a client and want to turn around the show set.
Nice.
She sets everything, breaks everything down, loads everything up, including me, because I do use a small mobility scooter.
Mm.
I could walk if I wanted to, but then there's a very good chance that usually something would break, like my hip socket or something is wearing. So we don't want to take that chance.
Yeah.
So we want to push this as long as we can. So she does everything, including loading the scooter.
Can I borrow her for one of my shows? Just have her load in. So when I turn around, all my stuff's all ready and set up.
Well, you work with a lot of animals and she'd probably be playing with the animals. So I don't know how good she would
be. I'd turn around, nothing be set up.
Whatever you got, a chipmunk, whatever. I don't know.
All right, well, let's talk about your performing career.
Sure.
You've been at this for quite a while. What are your main claims to fame that some people may have seen you in?
I almost claimed the fame. I did trade shows back then. I did the old leprechaun. I was the leprechaun at a trade show in New Orleans, and the guys didn't know I did magic. To draw a crowd around the booth that I was working for, I was dressed as a leprechaun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The outfit was horrible. I looked like a small, jolly green giant. So I told the guys, I said, let's get some people here at the booth. And I said, I don't know much about what you do for your business, but let me do about 10 minutes of magic in the booth as magic leprechaun, and while I'm doing that and draw a crowd, you get behind them so that when I'm finished, you're there to shake hands and, you know, give out your stuff that you have to advertise.
Yeah.
And they did it. And the first day, we were out of everything. They had to airmail things brochures and pamphlets and that down. The guy says, look, don't go anywhere because next year we're going to Vegas. Yeah. And you're coming. And the big honor I had was I was the last Philip Morris bellboy.
Oh, in the old print and commercials. What did he say? Well, you know probably better than I do.
Call for Philip Morris.
There you go.
Yeah, and I didn't do the call until that night. I didn't practice. Oddly enough, the person who called me was Philip Morris, not the guy that owned the real Philip Morris, but Philip Morris Costumes.
Oh, okay.
In North Carolina, and everybody knows Phil. Phil called me, and I was working in this particular show I was doing for 12 years. I took a night off. I had a mustache and like the Harry Blackstone look, and I had to shave it off. He said, I'm flying you to North Carolina, and we're going to pick you up. We're going to the shop. We'll get fitted for the bellboy costume, take you to lunch. We'll go back, pick up the costume, and then we'll go let you meet Mr. Ward Hall, who at that time designed amusement parks.
Mm-hmm.
I spent the night in a train car. Red velvet. I'd never brought a camera with me. I'm in this train car and I have a porter. And it was like, Mr. Irwin, you need anything? Mr. Irwin, you need your shoe shine. Next morning, they picked me up, brought me to a Calabasas County, and they were going to build a new cigarette plant. He said, look, when you get there, no one sees you. We get you to the stage and we have a big cigarette box and you're going to pop out that box. Okay. And he said, there'll be cameras from all over. He says, you pop out that box and you just do the call for Philip Morris. And I said, well, first of all, let me know what is in front of that box I'm popping out of.
Yeah.
This is not much stage. You know, I'll go right into the audience.
Yeah.
Microphone set and I popped out. And for the first time, I did call for Philip Morris. Mm-hmm. Then I did all the people in the had to be over 1,000 people. And I said, everybody help me out. And we all did the call together. And then they had to sneak me back to the dressing area. Then they let the press in. And the first question they asked me in the press was, how do you feel having this company make fun of your size? My reply was something like, well, this is an honor. I don't think they're making fun of my size. Otherwise, I wouldn't have taken this.
Yeah.
So I had to go sign autographs. Yeah, Little Johnny was the guy's name, the bellboy. Little Johnny, Little Johnny. And a lady came over, and she had an eyeglass case. And she says, Little Johnny, she says, would you sign this? I don't have anything else. Would you sign this for me? And tears are coming down her eyes. And I'm going, okay, what's going on here, you know? And she says, Mr. John, she says, you know, you came to our town years ago. And she says, my mom was sick and couldn't come downstairs to come see you. And after you came up to see my mom. Okay, this lady believes I'm really Johnny.
Mm.
A lot of people came up and said they remembered seeing me in commercials. And I did it one time. Oh. That was it, one time.
There was another actor that was doing it before you, or?
I think there were two others. There could have been three others that did it. But all the guys were equally proportioned. I think some of them were taller than me, actually. They'd walk around the hotels with messages, you know, call for Philip Smith or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny how things change. One of my first commercials ever was for Virginia Slims, a cigarette commercial, 20 some odd years ago when you could have commercials. Although it was for, I think it was for Japan, but not anymore.
But I did the leprechaun, I did the bellboy. I had parts that I didn't take, and agents called me to do things that I wouldn't do because they were just basically to make people laugh at me. I'll tell you something. You can keep it on tape if you want, but America's Got Talent called.
Oh.
And this was in the beginning. There their like their first to second year. Mm-hmm. And they were doing some tryouts in New Orleans. And the girl said, I'm calling from America's Got Talent. And I mm-hmm. said, well, how did you get my name? And she says, well, we're looking in the phone book for magicians. We'd like to have magicians. Yeah. She said, I see yours says the world's smallest magician. We talked to some people about you. And she says, we thought it would be funny to have a midget magician. And I said, well, you're going to think it's funny, but I'm not doing anything. And I hung up the phone.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not laughing.
And people are telling me today I should have done it, because even if you don't get through, at least your name's out there. But at that time, what they were doing is they were taking film clips and they were cutting them up, which they don't do anymore. And they make you look like an idiot.
Television has changed a lot in the last 10 years. I remember when I first started watching American Idol, of course, was the famous one for this, for making fun of people at the very beginning, especially the first few auditions. You know, they'd make fun of you and do everything to humiliate you. And the audience would be like, yay, isn't that funny? Yay, ha, 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 until you got to the final rounds. And I think America's Got Talent and other shows like that emulated those things at first. And then over the past few years, they realized that, you know what? The audience doesn't necessarily like that.
Right. True.
And so now they're putting more of a positive spin. If you watch The Voice and some different thing, Penn and Teller, they put a more positive spin on it now.
Yeah. And I think it was quite rude to call and just come out with it. Like she thought I was chomping at the bit. Oh yeah. Anything you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't do it. And I really don't regret it.
One of the judges on there is one of my idols. People hearing this that know Howie Mandel for now, they don't know him 20 years ago. He was hilarious 20 years ago, and he was one of my idols. Him, Steve Martin, the amazing Jonathan. I even wrote down Bugs Bunny. So those are the guys that I emulated when I was putting my shows together. Are there people that you idolized as you were growing up?
Harry Blackstone Jr. I watched Harry a lot. Tom Mullica.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with Ab Dixon on a show, and Carol Fox. Mike Finney.
Yeah, I just released a podcast interviewing him today. It's wonderful. It's real fun.
When Carol Fox and Ab Dixon were in town, I mean, they did the strangest things. They were just a funny pair.
Carol Fox does a lot of emceeing. I think Mike Finney mentioned Carol Fox on his interview too. Really, really fun.
Yeah, I love to MC. I really do. Since I'm not mobile enough to go back and forth and back and forth, I don't want to do that on the scooter. I usually sit on the far left or right of a stage, and I'll MC a show. I'll just go dark, and then they'll spotlight the performer, and I'll come back and do what I have to do. Those are the guys that I kind of grew up with.
Now, you sent me a magazine article. What magazines have you been in?
I made the cover of the MUM in 2006.
Oh.
Which was an honor.
That is an honor. MUM is a famous magic magazine. So you were on the cover of MUM?
I was on the cover, and I sent you the story that was inside. That was from the MUM.
Oh, that's terrific.
But a lot of people don't know, back in 96, I was on the cover of the Linking Ring, which is IBM. One of the things that in the back of my memory stands most clear is Harry Blackstone Jr. came down to New Orleans to work at the university.
Mm-hmm.
The magicians planned it, and after they planned a little party backstage for him. And I had gotten one of his dad's programs from his dad's show.
Mm-hmm.
I had it with me, and I thought it would be cool to have him autograph it. All the magicians are around Harry Blackstone, and here I am, a guy 4'3". You're lucky even know if I'm in the room. And I'm not a pushy guy. Harry happened to look over and saw me standing there. And as clear as day, he said to the other guys, excuse me, gentlemen, but I see a friend of mine over there. And we had never met.
Pointing to you?
Yeah. And he came over, got down on one knee, which I always tell magicians to do, you know, when you're working with kids, get that eye level.
Absolutely.
Harry said, I see you got one of my dad's programs. He said, I said, yeah, would you autograph it for me? And he did. But just the fact that he cared enough to say, excuse me, gentlemen, I have a friend of mine over there.
What a nice honor. Yeah.
Really, really was.
Wow. Well, walk us through some of the things that you went through throughout the years of performing. You were clowning at first, I think I read.
No, actually what happened was, naturally, I spent a lot of time in the hospital. A magician came up. He did a show, and I had a little cigar box with card tricks in it and things like that. And I went back and I talked to him. He said, you know, we have a magician's group in New Orleans. It's called the Crescent City Magician's Guild. And they meet at my home on Big St. Charles Avenue. He says, I want to invite you. And I got to meet some local magicians. And from there, it kind of bloomed and bloomed to a point where my mom says, why are you buying all this crap? Until the day my picture appeared in a local paper. And then she carried that picture in her purse all the time.
I think all of us have been through that. I have friends and relatives, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this magic thing? And here it is. I've been making my living now for 22 years. And now they're like, oh, still making your living doing that magic thing? I'm like, yeah, yes, I am. That's what I do. That's who I am.
But the circus thing started out, we had a guy that used to do little vignettes on TV. I wrote him and I said, you should go down and visit the circus. He says, well, you have any interest in a circus? And I said, yeah, all my life I've wanted to join. So he did this little vignette about the guy who wanted to join the circus. Two clowns, Walter and Mildred Steinmetz, were the lead clowns. And they said, well, would you like to come back tonight and work? And I said, would I? I don't think I'll go home. The first 2 years when they came back, they'd call me and say, we're coming in around November. Do you want to work the week? And I said, sure. So it blossomed from that. Being the little guy, you get chased a lot.
Is that part of the circus act?
After the tiger act, a spotlight would hit me and I'm standing in a center ring with a pit helmet and a musket bigger than I am. Mm-hmm. The ringmaster says, ladies and gentlemen, please do not get out your seat. We have a tiger loose. This guy dressed as a tiger would come running out. I'd just haul, you know, with the musket and everything. And then he'd grab me and throw me over his shoulder. I'm going, I hope this guy can see. Because if he trips, it's over for me, you know.
You're in trouble.
Did that two or three times a week. And then we tried different things, what we call the long shirt gag, that two clowns get in the fight. She grabs him around the shoulders and she pulls his shirt over his head and it comes out about 50 feet long. But we had good times. You never know how you miss home until you're sitting in the center ring on Thanksgiving Day eating a hot dog. Oh. And the guy, one of the clowns came over and said, don't feel bad. It's a turkey, Frank.
Thanks for that.
Really needed that. I've had to reinvent my show like two or three times. And by reinvent, I mean, I had to work it to where I could still do it. When I couldn't stand very long, I put a stool in the act and the stool is there. And I kind of do the old cowboy thing where I'd hang one cheek on the stool. And I got to the point where standing was not an option. So I'd use a chair.
So right now you do all your shows in a chair?
Yeah, just sitting on a chair.
How do you make your living now? I mean, what type of shows, what type of venues?
School shows in the summer, libraries for summer reading, daycare centers. I can't do birthday parties anymore because getting from point A to point B would require this little scooter. Mm. And I don't know if you saw the scooter in any pictures, but it's a little bitty thing.
Yeah.
Tiny as you can get, not one of these big things you see in Walmart. I've had people call for birthday parties, and I have to ask a simple question. Do you have any steps at your house?
Right.
They want to know why, and I say, well, I use a small mobility scooter. And then they say, we'll call you back.
Yeah, I know what that means.
Yeah, don't wait for that return call.
Yeah, exactly.
my income dropped drastically until I started pursuing more schools.
Mm.
And it's just my wife and I, so carrying things, big backdrop and things like that. When I work the libraries, I don't use a backdrop. I set up so the books are my backdrop.
Your venues and mine, your market and mine are exactly the same. Mm-hmm. I do elementary schools, libraries. And it's interesting that you mentioned the scooter, because I don't know if you know Christopher Barnes, Christopher T. Magician. The way he does birthday parties is he'll park a block away and he'll have all the kids come out to the front of the house, and he'll actually drive a scooter up to the house, and everybody will cheer, "Yay, it's the magician, yay!"
Yeah, but when you get to the house, you can't get inside.
Yeah, that'd be a problem, huh?
That would be the problem. I could use a walker. I take that chance of being knocked down by some kids or something, you know.
And that's probably not the first image you want kids to see.
But when I do libraries, I don't hide the scooter. I mean, the scooter is right there behind the props parked. The kids see me drive in, some of them to set up, don't make any big deal out of it. But then again, I don't hide it anymore.
Mm.
As far as birthday parties go, I have word of mouth. I've had people call me and they remember me from the 12 years back in the 70s and 80s when I did the show. I was there 12 years on a handshake.
You were where for 12 years?
It was a restaurant, but they had a stage built in. The guy was open for 6 months. He had a country and western singer that came in at like 9 o'clock at night. Someone suggested I go and try to pitch him a show for family. I went in and I sat down with an Albert Goshman rising card deck, which I still use today and have. I did that to the guy at the table and it blew him away. He said, "Sure, why don't you come in? Can you come in next weekend?" I said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll do 30 minutes of balloons at the tables, and we'll do a 45-minute stage show with the dove and the whole bit." He said, "Sure, let's try it out." So what I did was, he didn't know that I had a lot of friends in radio. I called some of my friends and said, "Look, I'm working this gig next weekend." I said, "If you get a free second, could you plug it for me?" And he didn't listen to any of these stations, this guy. So at about 6:30, the doors started to open, and he had to put on extra staff. And people kept coming in and in and in. And after it was over with, he said, "I didn't know you were that famous." And I felt like saying, "Neither did I." He said, "Could you come back and work the rest of the month?" And I said, "Sure." And then I stopped asking him. I just came back every Friday and Saturday, and that lasted for 12 years.
Wow.
That was a dream job.
Do you have any other favorite performing stories? I mean, other than the ones you've already told me with Blackstone Senior and everybody lining up at the restaurant?
You mentioned about the nudist camp.
Oh, well, we'll get into that. You know what?
Okay.
Let's skip that for now, and I'm going to get right into that, and we'll get into that.
Okay.
So do you have anything other than that?
What I really would like to do, because none of the younger people really know me. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If things go well, the body and things, I mean, in July I'll be 73.
Mm.
I've decided to go gray. And I'd like to do a couple of small conventions. Uh-huh. They'd have to accommodate me, which is very easy. Instead of the steps, you tell the hotel you want a ramp on a stage. Either that, or they can supply one of these little elevators that a lot of schools have now.
Do you have specific things you would talk about at conventions?
I wouldn't do it to talk. I'd like to be an act. Do some things that, you know, maybe people haven't seen. I'm very picky about when I set my stage. I go out and see what the audience is going to see.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. I don't just set the stage and say, "Here I am," and audience comes in and what they see is what they, I like to see what they see. When I do school shows, I never close the curtain because when the curtain opens and you're 4'3" and you're sitting on a chair, it'll take another 20 minutes to get the kids quiet from, you know, whatever they're doing, all the oohs and ahs. Even when I was walking and went out through the curtain, I always left the curtain open because here you have these cylinders that are all shiny and you have these boxes, and kids who come in early have to wait for the rest of the kids. I hate that word, kids, I'm sorry. The children who come in first, you know, have to wait for the others. So you get this gossip going. I wonder what he's going to do with that box. I wonder what he's going to do with that. I want them to see everything so that when they come in, they're ready to go.
Yeah, there's anticipation for the show coming up.
I guess I look at things a little differently. In that magazine, I came up with a little idea called the Kid Clip. And I never did anything with it. And there's probably guys out there using it now. It's just a little rope around the neck with two little alligator clips on the end. Because if you give a 3-year-old or 4-year-old a card to hold of any kind, he's not going to hold it very long.
Yeah.
He ain't going to twist it up or turn it around. So this way you just clip the corners and let it hang around his neck.
Oh.
And that way he's not going to expose it before time or bend it or put it in his mouth or anything like that.
Oh, that's a great idea. Somebody listening to this is going to take that, if not me.
Well, that's fine. I'm at the age where I don't care. Like Michael Finney says, I'm at the age where I can look out my window and yell at the kids, get the hell off my lawn.
Get off my lawn!
Yes.
All right, well, we're going to move on to some fan questions. You want some fan questions?
I don't know. Oh, go ahead.
All right. Every time I interview somebody new, I put on my Facebook group that you can ask questions of me and I will ask questions of my guest on the show. And, you know, I wrote that on my Facebook and you didn't have any fan questions, but here's what
I have no fans.
Well, no, you have a lot of fans. You know, what's interesting is that you have a lot of fans, but no questions, because here's what people said. Tim Sonnefeld, an amazing magician and owner of Wonder Imagery out of South Carolina, says, Irwin is a great guy and fine magician and quite a story. Make that stories. Can't wait. And Baron A. Stringfellow, an excellent magician out of Hiawatha, Kansas, says, I love Irwin and Steffi. And then Carmen Tellez, owner of CharmandHappy.com, one of the largest family talent agencies in LA, says, Irwin is going to be the biggest part of my morning the day his interview is released. Bam.
Carmen, there you go.
That's what you get.
I'm open for business.
There you go.
I'll take the next flight to California.
All right. So we are going to do fact or something John just made up.
All right. Go right ahead.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a headline. You're going to tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, here we go. First headline. When Irwin was born, the doctor told his parents that he would live only 5 days.
True.
Oh, true. Tell me what happened.
Well, I was born with the osteogenesis. I was born with a broken arm, a cyst around my stomach. So every time I try to eat something, it would come back up. So after about a week of being born, I had to go through surgery to have that removed. At that time, they didn't know much about osteogenesis imperfecta. So the doctor just decided that that was going to be the diagnosis. 5 days.
And what did your parents have to say about that?
Well, my father was quite angry, and my mother said, no way, we'll take him home, give him all the love we can. So my cousin, who was an intern at the time, came by the house. And if you have osteogenesis imperfecta, the whites of your eyes have a bluish tinge to them, mm-hmm. and that's called blue sclera. And he took one look at me, and he knew what I had, and he said, I got just a doctor for you. I went through with that doctor, you know, and he was a big help. And from then on out, It was money, money, money. You know, at that time it was got to a point where I had to go through clinics because we didn't have the money. Mm-hmm. Both my parents are deceased now, and I just kind of wish I had the money that, you know, I could pay them back for all the money they spent on me. My mother called me her China doll because I broke so easily. She said, God gave you something, use it to your advantage.
And that's what you've done over the years.
Absolutely.
Now, you were telling me a story about when your dad heard the news.
Yeah, my dad heard the news of that, and he argued with the doctor. He says, there's no way. And the doctor said, don't tell me, I'm a doctor. Mm-hmm. And my dad punched him.
Oh!
And my dad lost his job because my dad worked at the same hospital I was born in. But he says, that was the best getting fired I've had.
Well, yeah. So he punched the doctor right in the face?
Yeah, right in the nose. And, you know, when I was born, I can understand the doctor's point because when I was born, they didn't know much, if anything. And my mother carried me home in a clothes hamper. At that time, they were made out of wicker. And she carried me with a clothes hamper home. They wouldn't pin my diapers on because they didn't want to put any pressure. It was give and take there for a long time.
Wait, so you had no diaper?
No, I had a diaper, but
I'm confused.
You just take the diaper and put it like they put diapers on, but instead of pinning it, you just lay it over you.
Oh, I see.
No diaper was when we're going to get into the other story. No.
Yeah, we'll get into that. All right, next headline. Irwin has been performing magic longer than any other little person in the world.
I would think so.
Oh, I made that up, but it may be true, huh?
It may be true because we had a little guy that lived down here named Joe White. Joe was one of his characters he did, he was Oscar Mayer. Wieners.
Oh, yeah.
Joe would ride on the Oscar Mayer thing in parades, and he was little Oscar. Mm. Like I did the bellboy, Joe was little Oscar. He'd get a headline in the paper and call himself the world's smallest magician. And then I'd write the paper and say, I want to equal time because I am the world's smallest magician.
Mm-hmm.
When the Hannaford show was in town, Philip Morris, the costume guy, was ringmaster part of it. He brought us both out in the center ring and measured us.
You had a magician off.
I did. And I was an inch shorter than Joe.
You're like, yay!
Yeah, I won 4 tickets to anywhere in the United States from an airline, and it was the something with the smallest bears. All these people showed up, like 5'2".
Yeah.
4'9". And now all of a sudden, 3 little people walked in. And it was like, ah, come on, guy, this ain't fair. Them guys is midgets, you know?
Hey, wait a minute.
That's not fair.
Yeah.
I had a tie with a girl, but we both had shoes on. And I said, well, take your shoes off and let's back to back. And again, I was an inch shorter. Claim to fame, I'm an inch shorter.
You see, you should have a belt that says world's smallest magician, you know, world champion or something.
Well, you know, the crazy thing about it is I believe there was a gentleman in Spain who looked to be a lot shorter than me. I don't know if he's still alive, but, and, you know, I said, the heck with it. If somebody wants to come down here, then fine. They want to measure off, let them come to me.
Yeah.
But in all the years I've used it, and guys have said, why do you say the world's smallest? Why don't you use the world's shortest?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just started saying world's smallest, and it just kind of stuck.
Yeah, I like that title.
Next headline.
All right, last headline. Last one, and the one we've all been waiting for. Irwin worked a show at a nudist camp.
With my clothes on.
With your clothes on?
Yeah.
Tell me about how that worked out.
Well, it just so happened that the gentleman who first got me started in the Magic Club owned a nudist camp across the lake from here. It's still running today. It's probably the only nudist camp left. It was grandfathered in, so it's still there. He said, "Look," he says, "I'm going to be almost 90 years old." He said, "And I want to do a party." He says, "I want you to come." So they had a couple of big areas there that were buildings, and he said, "You can work in this building. I have a portable stage, and you can go in there and do the show, and everybody's going to come in from the whole nudist camp and sit down and watch you." And you know this old thing where if you get nervous, picture your audience in their underwear.
Yeah.
I went beyond that. There are some people you really don't want to see naked.
Yeah, some things you can't get out of your head, huh?
No, I had dreams for weeks. He said, "Now, are you coming naked?" And I said, "Well, does your plumber come in and take his clothes off?" So I said, "No, I'm not going to come naked. I have no place to hide my dove."
Well, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, where do you hide all of your gimmicks and things?
I did the show, but the crazy thing about it is I was prepared to get a lady on stage and a man on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you time to picture that.
Yeah, I got it. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm doing key erect. It's, you know, you borrow the keys and everybody's sitting in these chairs and this guy's going around and he's collecting all these keys. And one person drops the key and it falls directly between their legs on the chair.
Okay.
So they find the key. And my biggest line all night long was, "I'll have no problem finding that key."
Yeah, I'm sure.
And it was like, brought the house down. You know, I said, I knew what they wanted. They wanted jokes about being nude.
Of course.
That was Fact. Or something John just made up.
What other crazy stories do you have?
Listen to Michael Finney, and he was talking about vomit.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the same way. I was working at this place where I had the 12-year gig, and this little kid gets up on stage, and he's standing next to me, and all of a sudden, I see his cheeks go, you know, and right on the stage. And so I look at the kid and I say the most stupidest thing probably I've said since I can find that key anywhere, was I look at the kid and I go, "Do you do this every night at 7:15?
I think that's funny.
And I excused him, put the tripod table right over it, you know, and went right on with the show.
Yeah.
And I figured out of sight, out of mind.
I think any of us that have done kid shows long enough, you either have a kid up there peeing or vomiting or something.
Yeah, kid was peeing and it was running down his leg and off the stage. This was at the big Orpheum Theater. Tried to make it nice for the kid. Didn't want to embarrass him.
Of course.
And so the clown on the show that night took him off backstage and we got him, didn't make a big thing out of it.
What else?
I had three trained poodles. Mm-hmm. We used to put the poodles through their paces. One day the poodle stopped dead center in the stage and pooped.
Perfect.
And I looked at it and I said to the audience, "Thank God I don't have an elephant."
Yeah. Then the producers say, "Well, can you make that happen next show?"
I've worked with pigs, worked on the road with a hog act, not my act, but a hog act, and to where the promoter between shows had to come in with the Lysol and spray all the theater down to get the smell of the pig act out. It's crazy.
Oh, man. Well, before I let you go, I'm going to tell you this one story about I used to make one dove I had years ago. Every time I would make him appear, he would wait about 10 or 15 seconds and then he would poop.
They do that.
Every single time. My dove now doesn't do it. So what I would do is I would make him appear and then I would pretend that I made him poop. Like he was a trained dove and he would poop on command. So I'd make him appear, and then I'd make him poop, and the kids loved it. And I did do it over and over again.
One of the things of being a good entertainer is behind your, in your mind, you've got to keep those gears turning, because, like, thank God I don't have an elephant. Yeah. It's been fun.
This has been fun. Yeah, thanks for doing my show. This was great. This is great. This is really fun talking to you, Erwin.
I appreciate it. And, you know, maybe I'll see you at a convention or two.
Now, do you have some social media or something else you want to promote before I let you go?
I'm on Facebook most of the time. I'm not a tweeter.
Our friends will find you on Facebook.
I'm sure they will. It's just Erwin Royce, and there I'll be.
There you go. All right, and thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist podcast. And thanks again to my new friend, Erwin, for hanging out. Oh, and make sure to take a look at those pictures on Erwin's show notes page. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.